following was produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated in Memphis, Tennessee.
This episode from Radioland is brought to you by our friends, as always, from Central Barbecue. Yes, indeed, it's a Memphis institution, and people here in Memphis have known about it, of course, as long as they've been around. It's the best tasting barbecue here. In fact, it is repeatedly voted number one as the best place to get those slow smoked Memphis style ribs, the slow smoked pork, pulled pork sandwich. Oh my goodness. And all the sides that go with it. And those of you that live outside the Memphis area can also enjoy the fine taste of Memphis. All you have to do is go to their website, cbqmemphis.com, or you can find their banner ad at radio-memphis.com. Look for the grinning pig there and it'll take you right over to their site where you can order up some barbecue to be shipped right to your door. Oh, why would I want to do that? Well, because Memphis is the best. We do it a very special way here. There's a certain taste here. It's the taste of the South. That's what it is. It can be right on your dinner table here in a couple of days. All you have to do is go on and order it, get you some ribs, get you some pulled pork, invite a few friends over, and make them really, really jealous that you know the inside secret. Central Barbecue. Yes, three locations in the Memphis area and online, cbqmemphis.com. All right, let's get on with the show. Hello, my name is Rick Cheddar, and this is From Radioland. Greetings, salutations, hello, hey, how's it going? Welcome to another episode from Radioland. As I record this, right this moment, there is a football game on. there's a big game happening, and to be honest with you, I could give a shit. To be honest with you, it's just a thing. I don't know. It's the Super Bowl. I'm not a fan. I've never really been a fan of the NFL. It's not the game that I grew up with. They've made all these changes to it, and quite frankly, I'm seeing what's happening to these players later in life, and it gives one pause. The CTE damages that are done, the brain damage, the concussion, the repetitive injuries to these guys' heads is really quite remarkable. And there was an article I saw not long ago about one of the guys that was in Super Bowl I, Woody something. Anyway, Woody was the MVP for that game. And he's in his early 70s, and he's in a home, and he doesn't know where he is. He doesn't know who his family is. He doesn't know anything about the game. He kind of has flashes of memory from it. But it's sad. It's tragic what's going on. There's a lot of guys in the sport who have children that they don't want their children to play. It's becoming a trend, and as a result, there's a thought, a fear perhaps, that the sport may go away. They're just running out of people that'll be interested in wanting to play the game. And for that as it is, I mean, it's an interesting thought. Personally, I think if they want to save the game, they should take the face masks off the helmet. That's a good start. These guys will be more willing to protect their heads. A lot of what's happening is they're using the helmet as a weapon. And I know they've been trying to stop that, and it's not working. You know, when they played the game back in the early days with the old leatherhead guys that were out there running around and going crazy in amok out there, it was a little bit different of a game. As a result, the Super Bowl has become the spectacle that it is. And it's really most people that have their Super Bowl parties, they are not really watching the game. I've already seen all the commercials online, or most of them, the ones that really mattered. And, they're clever and all. And it is the spectacle that it is. And I don't know. I guess it's an institution that'll probably never really fully go away. There'll be different versions of that down the way. Who knows? But be that as it may. With the big game going on, I figured I'd come back here and get this going. Plus, I've got to head down to the radio station here in a bit and put on a blues show, which we've done for years. We've always had a show on Super Bowl Sunday. And when I first started, I thought, well, maybe I should just, not really, do one. But it turns out there's a lot of people that feel like I do. And they're like, no, I'm not watching the game either. I'd rather listen to the blues. So we've got that going on. That'll be happening. And speaking of matters over at the radio station at Radio Memphis, radio-memphis.com, couple of things. We've made a lot of improvements here of late on the outbound signal, the one that you actually hear in your device. We've been working very closely with some engineers that have helped us out quite a bit. Thanks to our friend, Mr. Will Danger over at American Studios, Mr. Brad Dunn over there as well. He is the nephew of the great Duck Dunn. And also our new recording engineer, Mr. Ryan Royals is also part of our little tribe of folk. And yeah, there's some really cool things coming. We'll elaborate as time goes on, but we urge you, if you haven't listened in a while, to take a listen, see what you think. Radio-memphis.com. More improvements on the way too. So we've taken something that we've had for 5 years and actually figured out a way to improve on it, which is kind of cool. And there's still some room for growth, and we're real thrilled about that. So that'll be happening. Stay tuned, as they say. Speaking of which, today's episode is kind of cool. It came from a show. I know here of late we've been doing this. We've been pulling our guests from the Booze and Blues show, and it's good. It works out that well because it's a great platform, and we've been fortunate enough to be blessed with a few guests. We've got some others that are coming up too. As which you will hear later. But be that as it may, this episode features our good friend, Mr. Cedric Burnside. Cedric is the grandson of the great R.L. Burnside. R.L., of course, had recorded at one point down in our facility before we got there, but still, it counts. He did the Mr. Wizard record down there, which is a tremendous thing. But Cedric, his grandson, stopped in, had a chat with us. He's up for a Grammy for his record that he did with Mr. Ayers. It's called Descendants of Hill Country. You're going to hear a track from that tune, a track from that album a little bit later on as well. But we sat down with Cedric and had a fine conversation. Jeff and I did, for sure. And, well, you know, let's get into it and hear what was said about what it's like to be nominated for a Grammy right here from Radioland.
Cedric is in the studio with us. Thank you so much for coming down, and thank you for this album, by
man,
God.
Thanks for having me, and you're welcome, man. You're welcome.
Yeah, he's right. This brings your faith back into the full long form recording instead of just a single here and there.
Yeah, that's
because you
want to
hear it from top to bottom and then hit it again. It is so good. You and Trenton Ayers did the record, right?
Trenton Ayers and my uncle Gary Burnside.
And Gary's on it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Wow. My God. It so lives up to its name, the whole Descendants of Hill Country vibe to it, because you are touching into those roots. But between what you and your grandfather, because you played with him for years.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah. Bunch of years, man. About 11, 12 years, me and Kenny Brown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the adopted son.
Yeah, the adopted son. You're right.
During those years when you were playing with them, I would imagine it was an incredible learning experience playing with those guys. But was it by design? Was it your grandfather saying, come on, son, we're going to come out and play? Or?
Well, but my dad, Calvin Jackson.
Yeah.
You know, he played drums with my big daddy before, you know, I came in.
Right.
And when I turned about, you know, 13 years old, actually my dad moved to Oskolen, you know, about a year, maybe a year and a half before I started playing with my big daddy.
Yeah.
And so I came along and around age 13 did my first tour and been doing it ever since, you know, till he passed. And here I am today, you know, still trying to carry it on.
I was talking to a friend of mine who lives down the street from me, and you know him, Bubba Bonds.
Bubba, yeah, I know Bubba.
And I told him you were going to be here, and he's like, oh, man, tell Cedric I said hello.
Yeah, he played with Kenny. Yeah,
yeah, he played with Kenny. He still does. He still plays
he still
with
do.
Kenny. And I think he even sat in with R.L. a couple of times.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
More than a couple.
Yeah.
Had to help us drive a little bit, too.
Well, and that leads me to the point. I heard a fantastic story about him and just how great of a guy he was. You guys would pull into a gas station, and Bubba would stick his head in the van, and he'd say, Big Daddy, what do you need? And he'd say, well, give me a V8. Because he really liked V8.
Yeah, he loved it.
And the place would be out of it. And he'd come in, he goes, there's no V8 in here. And he'd go, well, just give me a full cylinder instead. Which is just a can of tomato juice. So
that sounds like Big Daddy, man.
Oh, my
that
God.
That was him.
Yeah, and I mentioned to you before we got started, when you first got down here, this room, you guys did the Mr. Wizard record.
Mr. Wizard, yeah. I remember that CD, man. That crazy hat.
Oh, yeah, the crazy hat, yeah. But it's a great
record. Was this the tracking room then, or was the other room the tracking room?
To be honest, man, I know we recorded.
This wall may not have been here at that time.
Yeah, it's been a long time, but I know we recorded here, but it's been a long time. I can't remember what the room looked like.
Yeah, because that was after Ass Pocket, I think it was?
Yeah, right after Ass Pocket Whiskey.
And Ass Pocket was a big turning point for you guys, because that really kind of brought in a different sound, and you were modernizing the blues a little bit.
Yeah, I played just one song you know, on Ass Pocket. But I was there during the whole recording.
Yeah.
And it was amazing, man. They did the whole thing in 4 hours, and it was crazy.
Oh yeah, yeah. 4 hours, the whole record.
The whole record was done in 4 hours, and I remember they rented this little hunting house. Mm-hmm. Way out in Holly Springs, like on in the outskirts, way in the woods, and they recorded it there.
Wow.
You know, 4 hours, it was done.
That's amazing.
That's motivation.
Yeah.
And that was what I was asking you before we started. Is I've seen you play twice. I saw you at the BMAs, not this year, the last year, and then I saw you do the Crawfish Festival.
Yeah, right.
And so I was asking you, when you recorded this Descendants of Hill Country, did you play each track straight through as live? Because you sound just as phenomenal as you do live on
Thank
this
you
track
so much.
On this
well,
album.
The whole idea for, of this CD was to, you know, give people more of where we come from, you know, get them more of Holly Springs, you know,
right.
This style of music, is unorthodox, you know, is a different rhythm. But we got in the studio and we sat up, you know, actually like we was playing on stage.
Mm-hmm.
We sat up like we was playing a gig, you know, and we just jammed it out. We actually laid down all the tracks, you know. We did about, it's 13 tracks on there. We did about 10 tracks in one day.
Mm.
And the next day we come back and did the rest of them. And then we did vocals. 3 days we was done.
Really?
3 days we was done.
3 days you recorded them?
Well, actually, the third day he was mixing some of the stuff.
Man, that.
Not quite the 4 hour romp, but still, 3 days is
remarkable.
Yeah,
Mona said it was 2 days. And then
2 days.
Was, yeah.
2 days and then mixing and mastering, yeah.
Well, and you know you're right when you talk about that North Mississippi flavor. I mean, you could taste it on this album, but you could feel like not just where it came from, but you could like barbecue sauce, man. It's
Lovable.
Yeah, it's on this album, man. And you also kind of feel. I mean, there's some guitar licks and it's kind of got a little Memphis vibe to it. There's definitely grooves in this album where it's not just you feel where it came from, but you see where it went.
Yeah.
And where it is now. That's this thing's powerful, man.
Thanks a lot, man.
I know Trenton's family is also steeped in the blues as well. Did he have relatives that have played?
Oh, yeah. Trent got it in his blood. Trent's father, Joe Ayers,
mm-hmm.
was one of the original bass players for Junior Kimbrough. You know,
okay.
And so, you know, Trent got it in his blood, man. And, you know, we really descendants of Hill Country, you know.
Oh, yeah. It's so true. Yeah, because that's when I saw you guys
Thank
last
God
was at
that.
The Crawfish Festival. And I'm sitting there watching this unfold. And
that was your reunion with Lightning Malcolm last year?
Yeah. Actually, it was this year.
Was it this year?
It was this year.
Yeah, it feels, gosh, it feels like forever.
Yeah, it was back in April.
Yeah, that was.
It'll be here again before you know.
I know.
That's the
thing. Weather still feels the same.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
That's right, same, though. And that was the first time you two had gotten together in several years, if I recall correctly.
Yeah. About 6-7 years.
Yeah. And that was a heck of a show. So you record this album in 3 days. Is that... I mean, going back to April, were these songs you'd already been playing out, already had just pretty much down, or were you bringing new stuff to the recording session?
Well, we all got together and, you know, kind of, you know, talked to each other, and we wrote, you know, 3 or 4 songs apiece, original, and we did a couple of, you know, covers, which was, you know, old traditional songs that my big daddy used to do. But we actually just wrote those songs on the fly. I got several songs that I never recorded yet, you know, still got them. But for some reason, that CD right there, we wrote all new songs and we wrote them on the fly. And we wanted to put something out there that really, really represent Hill Country Blues, you know, with the new generation.
It sounds like what you would hear if you went into a juke joint. You know, and I think that's the vibe you were going for, and if that was, you certainly nailed it.
Like a modern juke joint too, not just back in the day. Like
it pays homage to the roots, and I think that's what's special about it. You know, you hear that. Oh my God, Trent's guitar work is incredible.
Oh man, he's
really
a great
guitar player.
Yeah. Him and Gary both is phenomenal, man.
Well, you're a pretty decent guitar player.
Yeah, you play some
guitars
on this too, don't
Thanks
you?
I do.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, man.
We got one in here. I think he was tuning it up. I think we may get a tune out of him later.
Uh-oh.
Well, yeah, I was in here by myself like, oh my gosh, I'm by myself playing, and he's playing.
Having a private performance.
Right.
I've never won it.
Yeah.
Well, and I know Gary's on this album. We've had Gary in before.
Yeah, we have. Yeah.
In the old studio.
Yes.
Which was the back of his house.
Yeah,
At one point, we did this out of the back of his house.
I actually talked to Gary and told him I was coming up here.
Oh, yeah, it did. Yeah. Okay. I hope he said good things. We tried to be nice to him, but Gary's just so hard to work with. He was awesome.
Everybody in the Burnside family I've ever met have been wonderful. I never got a chance to meet your grandfather, and I would have loved to have had that experience. But if he's as genuine as he was in those documentaries and stuff that you see out there, lovely guy.
Yeah,
you know,
miss him a lot, man. He was a really great guy.
And
some of those
stories, oh my God, how you guys survived any of that is beyond me. But I'm sure as you're maturing now as a musician, you are gathering a few of those stories yourself.
Oh yeah, I got quite a few stories. Some I like to, you know, keep them in the back burner.
We'll
just
leave those there.
Yeah.
Well, all right, so this record, before we go any further, has been nominated for a Grammy. What happened? Did you get a phone call? Did they send you a letter and said, hey, guess what? What was that process?
Well, you have to, you know, become a member and send in all your you know, stuff. But and they was very interested, and, you know, we wouldn't know nothing until, like, December the 7th. And that's when they told everybody,
just came out.
You know, they'll let them know. So we was just waiting, you know, with anticipation, just trying to figure out.
But this is hot on the heels of you getting nominated for Best Instrumentalist on the BMAs as well, right?
Man, it's very, very
surprising. It's a good year to be.
Year
to be Cedric Burnside.
It is. It's a very good year. It's a good year.
But I thank God for everything, man. It's been a beautiful year. Been a beautiful year.
Well deserved.
So are you going to the awards then out in is it in L.A.? Is it where they're
doing? It's in L.A.
Yeah, are you
going
to go?
Yes, Stapleton, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're planning on going.
Right on.
I've never been nominated for a Grammy before, man, so
enjoy the process.
Yeah, I'm going to at least look at the red carpet a little bit.
Well, to be fair, I mean, I wasn't familiar with all the Best Blues Album nominees, but I know Shamika Copeland. She's amazing.
I love her, man.
Yeah,
she's a really good friend.
You're in good company. Just to be nominated with Buddy Guy and Shamika Copeland,
exactly.
Won, man. I mean, you're already.
I said the
same
thing.
You may not even need the hardware at that point just to have that.
Mr. John Primer.
Yes, sir.
Love him to death, man.
Right.
Great.
Yes.
So it's an honor to be there, man. You know, and just a blessing, you know, all at the same time.
Fantastic.
Yep.
Absolutely.
And we've had a good time talking while y'all were gone.
But
you know, Mona corrected me, and I had mentioned that Cedric was nominated for the BMA for Best Instrumentalist in Drums, but he's actually up for two other BMAs, am I correct?
Yes, for Best Traditional Blues Album and Best Traditional Male Blues Artist.
Best Traditional Blues Album with this album right here, Descendants of Hill Country, and then Best
Traditional
Male Blues Artist. What does that mean, Traditional Male Blues Artist?
Well,
or did they explain that to you when they tell you you're nominated for it?
Me, it's like being, you know, most of the old school cats, you know, it's traditional blues. It's more like that, you know. And so this CD is all original, and it's, you know, it's got that traditional sound. You know, it's got that old school sound.
It definitely does, and not to contradict you, or the purist there.
I was kind of progressive
a little bit, too. It's,
yeah.
But the purists don't have any room to move on this one.
No, they really don't.
We've had fun with that discussion.
And not the dog the purists. We talk about the purists.
It's all good, yeah.
It's sort of a bone of contention sometimes with certain artists about that. But that's a very pure, raw record, though. I mean, that was the design you had going in for that, wasn't it?
That's what we was looking for. We was looking for the raw sound. You know, what you see is what you get.
Right.
You know?
How would you describe yourself are you a purist in blues, or since you're a musician, are you trying to just change it a little bit at a time, just evolve it?
Well, I would like to say I'm a purist. You know, I like to write about what I go through in life, you know, and hoping people can relate to it, and, you know, maybe they done been there and done that, you know. But also, you know, I like to collaborate with people. You know, I'm up for, you know, trying anything, you know, new. Just my big daddy did it too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, even when he thought it might not work, you know, he thought it might not sell. When they did, you know, Ass Pocket of Whiskey, he was like, oh, no, man, that ain't going to sell. No. You know, but that was one of his biggest selling albums.
Yeah, well, it was huge.
So, I'm open-minded. I'm open to, you know, try new things. But me, my heart is pure. You know, it's a purist.
So you wouldn't do anything like the Come On In record that with the had the dubstep that was at, which I love that record. It's really good
with the dance music.
Yeah. You've got to get into it, and you got to let it settle for a bit. But
I like that album. Loves that. I really like that album.
I liked it. That's one of those things again. You hear the purist kind of attack. But
I would guess I would try it. You know,
I'm
open minded to it.
And what I like about that record, I think it's there was that one and there was the other one. There was two that y'all did. I think it was Come On In and whatever.
Come On In.
Yeah, those records opened up doors for a lot of younger listeners to get them introduced to what Big Daddy was doing.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And what you guys were trying to accomplish, absolutely. You know, even though there was commercial successes, a lot of there was tracks that showed up on The Sopranos. There was television. There was movies. There was all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, Sandra Bullock. I forget the name of her, the movie she did. It was on there, and you know, Sopranos, all that, man. It was
So and good stuff that's around. A good thing, because if people just sit there and listen to it and go, "Who is this? I want to look up more." And nowadays, you can easily have it right there in front of you. So that does hopefully opened up the doors to more listeners for you.
It did, man. Especially the younger generation.
Yeah.
Because we was playing. You know, my big dad was playing for a big crowd, but it was more of an older crowd. And so, you know, of course, playing with John Spencer Blues Explosion.
Yeah.
Turned us on to a little younger crowd too, as well. You know.
Yeah, because they were sort of a punk blues outfit. And
they was.
Mm-hmm. And you guys were just jumping right in there. And, of course, right in the middle of that is RL just, you know, just soaking it all up and jumping in there. And just you can tell he's having fun with it.
Front pocket of gin. Your old man know I'm going to kick it in. Yeah, buddy.
Because didn't you guys work a little bit with the North Mississippi All-Stars, too? They were there for a stretch.
Yeah, we actually, you know, me and Gary, we grew up with Luther and Cody.
Yeah.
We played with them, you know, as teenagers. And me and Malcolm was touring together, and they did a CD with my big daddy from the Bonnaroo Festival.
Yeah, the Mississippi Bullweevil, I think, was the cut where he gives the toast at the beginning, and then it jumps into it, and it's a great, great song. Yeah. That is awesome. So, with this, I don't know how you're going to follow this record up. I'm sure you will, and you'll do marvelous with it.
He just needs 3 days, Rick.
I know. You know. We could probably beat that record, actually.
But I was thinking the same thing.
We could beat that record. Let's keep the cost down, for God's sake. You know, there's a starving blues artist in here.
I like Rick.
Are you going to take it out on the road? I mean, I know you have been, but with this new thing resting on your shoulders with this Grammy nom. You're gonna go out and play a bunch of rooms now this winter and spring and milk it for everything it's worth.
Well, you know, I think that's what it's all about.
That's the next move, right?
You put it out there, and you know, if it becomes successful, you have to promote it. You know, and so I think that's our next thing.
Got to sell it.
You know, really promoting this CD and giving people what they like and what they love, and writing new music as well. You know.
Who would you say outside of your family was instrumental? Who influenced you as a musician? I know your family is just so filled with every one of you guys are musicians and very talented at that.
Yeah.
But who outside of that? Were you influenced by that at all?
Well, you know, my big daddy, growing up as a kid, he played all types of music for us. Muddy Waters being, you know, one of those people. We heard a lot of Muddy Waters.
Yeah.
As well as Howlin' Wolf and, you know, John Lee Hooker. So that's the type of music that, you know, I grew up listening at, and I love those guys. You know,
basically your neighbors.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Because you guys were all from the same area.
Yeah, and my big daddy was real good friends with, you know, Fred McDowell, you know, Howlin' Wolf and Muddy Waters. They hung out, you know, real tough. But those the guys I really that really influenced me, and I loved the style. Yeah. You know, it was very unorthodox. You know, like I said, and you know, it just really grew to me. And so my music that I write today is gonna have that feel to it.
Right.
You know, it might be a modern song, but it's gonna have that old school feel to it.
Sure.
You know, that's where I come from.
Are you a self-taught drummer?
I am. Yeah, never went to school a day in my life for it. Just kind of watched and learned.
Yeah.
My dad didn't even have time to sit down and show me anything. I just, you know, looked at him a little bit, and then I looked at Kenny Kimbrough a little bit, and just kind of tried to mimic what I saw them do, you know. And
what was the first instrument put in your hands?
It was drums.
It was?
My first just instrument sitting was down. Drums.
A wooden spoon in a pan, probably.
I beat some buckets.
Some buckets. You got to do that.
Beating on buckets and pans and things.
Yeah.
Man.
You do it two Jai Joe figures in a plate. You're just going to find something to, you know.
Well, that's part of the tradition of what you grew up with and what your family grew up with was, you know, you may not have had much, but by God, you're going to make something work with what you had.
And all right, this is going to sound like a weird question, but I've always kind of on the air here.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about the Burnside family a lot, obviously.
Deep respect.
Yes.
Thanks a lot.
And
man.
I kind of compare you guys to the Neville family out of Louisiana.
Yeah, I love
not,
the Nevilles, man.
Like the family business is kind of.
Those guys love them.
Yeah. And it's just for one family to have that much talent. I mean.
It's criminal.
No, it's not criminal. No, it's well earned. It is well earned. It is a family that
has
brought this tradition down through the ages now at this point. I mean, there's multiple generations of the Burnsides. So when something like this happens, do you feel like a responsibility to that tradition? Like a lot, we talked to a lot of artists in here that, you know, for whatever reason they became musical artists. But for you, there's a family thing involved.
It is. You know, my big daddy, R.L. Burnside, he really opened the door, you know, for the Burnside family. You know, and being inducted to the Blues Hall of Fame.
Right.
You know, he Hill Country Blues, you know, legend from Holly Springs, Mississippi. I always wanted him to be in the Blues Hall of Fame, but I never really knew if he was gonna make it there or not, you know.
That's a foregone conclusion.
I knew that
a lot of us have never doubted.
I knew that he should have been there.
But
I just didn't know.
In this industry, too, a lot of people.
And when it finally happened, I was like, wow, you know, a long time waiting.
Well, see, he's influenced so many artists, though, and I think that's part of that. To get into the Hall of Fame, you got to touch so many lives, whether they're musicians or fans. Yeah.
I thank God for it, man.
Oh, my God.
I really do.
Following the family tradition, are any of your girls playing music or drumming or any of that?
Well, they are, man. I got all three of them guitars, and, you know, they pill around on the guitars right now. And, you know, hopefully I have a little girl band here pretty soon.
Yeah, so. You're going to have, like, the Jackson 5 at Burnside.
You're right.
Yeah, the Burnside 3.
Mississippi, baby. Mississippi. Mississippi 3.
I like it.
I think it's got legs. I think it does.
All right.
but that's good. I mean, obviously they know about that would be their great grandfather. And
They got a chance to see him, especially my oldest daughter. She got to see him a lot.
Oh yeah.
And my last two daughters. My last daughter was born in 2005. You know, my big daddy passed 2005,
that's right.
September 1st. So he did get to see her and hold her, you know, one time before he passed. But yeah, they really know about him. They know all about him.
He didn't have any other siblings that played, did he? R.L. was on his own, wasn't he? I know there was a lot of losses.
Sisters or brothers that played guitar? No. Not that I know of.
Or his father? I don't think anybody did.
No, his father. No, not even his father.
Because there was a lot. I know there was a lot of death that happened at one point there where he lost. He lost.
Not even his uncles that passed. Yeah. Nobody. I think he was the only one. It's kind of weird, but yeah.
And look what he kickstarted, for God's sake.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Hey. It's been beautiful, man.
All those uncles that you have and what they're doing, too. I mean, that's a great thing.
So was it always music for you?
It's always been music for me, man.
There's never a moment where you thought, you know, I want to.
Oh, I, I done strayed off and went all kind of directions, yeah, you know, but yeah. I never strayed from music.
Yeah.
You know, music always been a part of my life, and it always been my passion.
Right.
You know, as a kid, you know, I wrote my first song when I was 12 years old, believe it or not.
Uh-huh.
And
I don't. Yeah.
I never sang until I always sang, yeah. you know, to myself, but I never sang, you know, live until I was, you know, maybe in my early 20s, you know, right. 21, 22 years old, you know.
What made you change and do that?
Well, you know, me and Gary did a CD called Burnside Exploration.
Yes, I remember that.
And so,
yeah.
You know, I had to background him with some of his songs, you know, as well as he did with mine. And you know, I just said I was going to do it. And
what practice. Was it like stepping up to the mic for the first time at that point and just...
It was hard, uh-huh. you know, especially being on the drums and singing yeah. from the drums.
That's
yeah,
a talent.
You know what? I watched very hard, the know. Documentary on the Eagles, and they were, yes.
I like that.
And Henley
like
talking about doing that.
Yeah, yeah. And he said that was the most difficult thing that he ever did was play and sing at the same time. Because yeah, you got
to
keep up. Yeah.
Now it's second nature to me, but when I first, you know, had to do it, it took me about 6 months. You know,
yeah.
we locked ourselves in a little... outhouse and, you know, just, man, you know, went crazy with music and it took me, you know, several months to get it together, but I finally got it together.
One of our favorite people that we've had around here too is Lightning Malcolm, and I know you guys have worked extensively.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and just an interesting cat.
Two-man wrecking crew.
The two-man wrecking crew. And, you know, I always get a charge out of watching him play, and I've seen you two guys work together before, and it's... it is just really quite special. How did you guys meet? Was it just out on the circuit together? And
well, I met Malcolm for the first time at the Juke Joint. He's from Joplin, Missouri,
mm-hmm.
Actually, and he came down to the Juke Joint one weekend, man, and you know, he jammed with us, you know, sat in like we always, you know, do at the Juke Joint, and you know, about a month or two later, I saw him again. I think it was in Clarksdale, and he wanted me to play drums with him. I played drums with him.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we started a relationship then, you know, and off and on we played with each other. And, you know, eventually we got together and recorded a CD and started traveling, you know. Stayed together for about 6-7 years.
And so you guys writing together or just both bringing songs in? Or
yeah, we both wrote songs together, you know, yeah. on both CDs. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
because I know you play guitar and I know you play drum. I could see you sitting at home alone in front of a bass drum and a hi hat and a guitar. All
yeah, just kicking and going. Together, yeah,
right?
Yeah. Well,
is that how it works?
I never tried that.
Oh, really?
I see it all the time.
Yeah. You should,
but I always play on the guitar. I got a stomp box actually that Mona bought me for my birthday one year, and so I used the stomp box, you know, quite often. And I kind of got the rhythm together on the stomp box, you know.
There's more money at the end of the gig if you do that.
On the stomp box?
No, with a drum.
One-man band.
Yeah, exactly, one-man band. You. Get you a couple of kick pedals, a snare, and a drum.
That's
and
how you write.
Yeah.
Do you start with a beat? Do you start with the words? I mean, where does it come from? I mean, it's probably different for everything, right? I mean,
it is.
It's a stupid question.
You know, I could be riding down the road. Oh, it's not stupid at all. I can be riding down the road, you know, and I might think of some lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll get my phone and press record, and I'll just, you know, sing those lyrics in my phone.
Yeah.
It might be 2 months before I come up with music with it, you know.
Yeah.
Or I'll be sitting in the hotel room and playing my guitar, and I'll come up with an awesome riff and be like, wow, I got to do something with that. And it might be several months before I come up with a song, you know, with some lyrics to it.
So is it like
it comes all the time.
So it's got to kind of ways. Sometimes it's a slow boil. It's
it might be like a phrase or a line that comes. Man, that sounds kind of good. And then catchy, you start building a story around it. And
exactly. And I take bits and pieces of things that I recorded.
Yeah.
And I put it together. Sometimes I might write 4 songs in one day.
Oh, wow. You know,
it just comes to me like that.
Says the guy can put an album together in 3. So.
Not just any album, my friend, but
a Grammy-nominated
album. Album.
That's like saying, go write me a hit song.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Here's a couple of bucks.
Give me
what will it
give
me?
We're going to shoot a viral video, everybody. We're gonna make this thing go viral.
It could happen. You never know how things transpire. That's and that's just it. You don't really know. I mean... when you're sitting down, you're writing these tunes and you're laying them down, you're not really thinking about where that might take you. You're just hoping so much for certain things.
Well, I just know that those lyrics sounded awesome, and I was like, I know I can use this somewhere down the road.
Right.
You know, so I record it. You know,
here's to being patient. Yeah.
We've talked about this in this show before a couple times, and I mean a lot. It's a recurring theme, really.
Yes.
And that is that when you record the blues, it's like a Polaroid. You're capturing that moment. But unlike several other different types of modern music, of pop music or you know, rock or whatever it is, the blues is almost better as a live performance art form. There's something about the crowd and the energy.
I definitely understand what you're saying.
Is that, if I'm do in you a feel studio, that way? Or?
I do. I agree with you. When I'm in a studio, I love to be in the studio to record new music.
Right.
But to play it in front of the audience and see, you know, the energy that they give off lets me know that they really love this music. It makes me feel good.
Right.
It makes me want to play even harder, even
but
longer.
It's like a unique experience, like
it's
that moment.
It's a beautiful energy. Yeah.
So when you recorded it, did you dial back a little to save it for the stage? I've seen that happen.
Well, I didn't dial back, and the reason because I knew this CD needed to be that, you know.
It needed
CD
to be what it is.
Yeah, it needed to be, you know, laid down awesome. And it needed to be, you know, the rhythm needed to be tight.
Yeah.
And so,
driving force,
yeah, when we got in the studio, we was like, we're going to make this be the best that it can possibly be.
Yeah.
And so we gave it our all, you know, in the studio. But playing it live, just looking at the people's face and watching them dance and say, like, man, that's my favorite song, and call the song by name, that's a beautiful
thing.
So
you do spend some time behind the drums looking at the audience. You monitor what's going on out there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, man. You have to do that.
You feed off of that a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, you have to see what the crowd feel, what they're feeling, you know.
Lightning told us that it's real easy to play a juke joint. The hardest part is getting their asses out of the seat on the first tune. You know, after that, if you're not doing it, you're going to get out of there. They're going to run you out.
You got to
get up there and get going. And that's what I like about the record, is that you can't help but sit there and just bob your head to it and move, you know.
We heard nothing but good stuff about it, man. And like I said, it's a blessing. And I thank God for it. A lot of my friends, you know, call me and they were like, man, I've been had your CD in my, you know, CD player for a whole week. Mm-hmm. And I've been listening to it for a whole week. I ain't took it out, you know.
And so
I was like, wow, you know.
Multiple listens.
This is a beautiful thing.
And again, look, and not to dog anybody else out there, but we get a lot of music in here.
Yeah.
I listen to a lot of
music.
A lot of fantastic.
Yeah,
but this is, man, this is the Mid-South, all right? We have the best musicians in the world right here.
Exactly.
Yeah, we do.
Exactly.
And we get to feature a lot of you guys on this show. So it's rare when I hear an album and I go, oh, I'm going back for that whole thing again and again and again.
And again.
Well, I'm
and
glad,
again.
Man.
You know, it truly is what an album's supposed to be.
Wow.
Where did you record it? We recorded it
here in Memphis at Electrophonics.
Electrophonics? Records. Yeah.
At Scott Beaumont's place.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Scott did you good, I'll tell you that.
Man.
Yeah. He didn't force around on this.
And I can't wait to record another one, you know. And that's where we're going to go, Scott. Get ready, Scott, if you're listening. We're coming to you, man.
Well, that's good, because you know, with everything, that all the weight that this record has right now, no matter what happens, you got to keep making it and keep doing it and keep doing it.
Yeah.
You know, because it does. I know it's a roller coaster ride, and this record here, I think, will take you a long, long way. I really do.
Yeah.
You know, and it's my hope for you that it does, and I hope
Thanks
you
a lot,
sell
man.
A lot of them.
Thanks a lot.
Which, by the way, on CedricBurnside.net, which I have up over here, you can see it, you can hear it. Buy it.
Yep.
iTunes, CD Baby, Amazon. Can you buy it straight from your site?
What?
You don't have that set up?
Yeah.
It's to the CD Baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
CD Baby.
Now, make it where you can buy it off the site, because you get more of the.
You're right.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you're right. We always like to sell that for the artist, because you got.
You're definitely right.
You got to make a living, you know?
We're in the process of hooking all it up right now.
Oh, good.
And so this is an independent album, too, right? You put
yes.
this out yourself. Nobody.
Yes.
There's no
you're
label.
Not signed.
You're
no
not
label.
Yet. No distribution.
All such a side project right
oh
there.
You realize
God.
How many musicians out there you give hope? Just give hope to right there.
Absolutely.
By Grammy nominated independent album.
Well, man,
that's incredible.
Yeah.
I really have to say, not to down, you know, record companies. Yeah. Because, you know, everybody make their money, you know, the way they have to make their money. But, you know, I just haven't been real successful here, you know,
right.
with the last two or three record companies that I've been with. Not going to call it a name, but it's just that ain't been real successful mm-hmm. with me.
Nobody's going to look out right. for you like you will.
Exactly. That's, period. Exactly.
I mean, yeah.
And if I'm going to do wrong, I want to do wrong by myself. You know?
That's just like Eric Hughes, because he did that yeah. with the Drink Up record.
Yeah.
And Eric said, you know, at home, I've got stacks and stacks of CDs, and I don't mind putting them in envelopes and sending them out, because it just yeah. shows that somebody wants it. You know?
Exactly. They'll call you for it.
Yeah. They'll call you yeah. for it.
Yeah.
And that, of course, that Drink Up record is incredible, too. But no, this one here, I can't say enough of good stuff about it, Cedric. It's because I'm such a fan of your grandfather, I get that this feels like that's his music.
Yeah.
You know, and I like
oh,
that.
Right, man.
I think your grandfather would be very proud of you, too. I mean, because it does. It's, a lot, there's man. So much of that that's in there, and I love it. It's like he's still there.
Wow. Yeah. That's a beautiful thing, man.
I derailed you there, didn't I? I didn't mean
yeah,
to.
Yeah, a little bit. No, a little bit. It's okay. So what's next for the Cedric Burnside Project?
Well, definitely promoting this.
Going to the Staples Center and collecting some hardware.
Yeah, you're right about that. Definitely right about that.
Hopefully.
But, you know, also just you know, continuing to do our thing and write music and hopefully, you know, write another Grammy-nominated CD. You know?
Hey, you know, it's not out of the question. You've done it once.
And I get the exactly. sense for you, though. This is not about the awards. The awards are the icing on the cake.
Yeah. Like,
this is you do what you do.
Yeah.
And to the best of your ability, no doubt, because what went into this album, it's, yeah, you can hear it on every track.
Yeah, being,
thanks a lot, man.
It's one thing being a working musician, but it's another to be recognized for that effort. You know, and it's one thing to sell tickets, but to have somebody hold that record in their hands and listen to it and hear what people say about that, is it's got to hit you in so many different ways.
Well, I'm going to tell you, the most beautiful compliment I got, a guy walked up to me, he had the CD, and he listened at it, and I forgot to sign it for him. He left before I signed it. And so when I went back to this, I think it was in Pensacola, Florida, and I went back and he brought the CD. But he had listened to it, and he was like, man, I didn't get you to sign my CD the last time. He said, thank you for this gift. This wow. is a beautiful gift. You know?
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, man, I'm glad you enjoyed it. He was like, no, really. And he literally started crying. He was like, thank you for this gift.
Music,
and that was beautiful to me.
Yeah, music, you know, does that, and I think
blues
really taps into that, because you guys write and perform on such an emotional level. You know, rock and roll and metal is all about fantasy. You know, country is yeah. about, in a way, about fantasy. But blues...
It's about allegory.
It's about allegory. But blues is about as real as it gets. I mean, you guys are writing about real things and real yeah. emotions and real experiences. Are you writing about the things that you've experienced, or your family, or what?
Well, all of it. You know, my family go through hard times, too. And, yeah. you know, and I feel their pain. So sometimes I write, you know, a little bit about them, as well as myself and, sure. and what I go through. And, you know, hopefully, you know, like I said, people can relate to it, because, you know, it's different strokes with different folks, you know, but yeah. some people probably done been through that same, you know, drop that you've been through, you know, they done been through that same heartbreak that you've been through, you know,
yeah.
and so they can relate to it.
And
so
they're going to approach it from different angles as well. But, you know, but when they hear it, and this is what's so beautiful about it, you are so simple with it. You know, and that's the whole point. You
I
know,
like
it's
simple.
it's keeping it simple, and there it is.
I like simple.
When
man.
You hear it, you go, "Oh, I get it now. He gets it. I'm not alone in this." You know,
yeah.
that's the beauty
exactly.
of it.
Exactly.
So, go ahead. No.
Well, that's I was going to say, I had an experience like that earlier this fall. I went to see the band Everclear. I don't know if you've heard of them.
I heard of them before.
Yeah, and they're on their 20th year tour, and so Art is up there singing.
Bunch of old geezers.
I know, right?
20 years.
I feel old. I remember rocking out to their
biggest. Yeah, no kidding.
And so he's up there, and the, you know, there's 100, 250 fans mm-hmm. in the audience, and he's singing about his father and how his father left, and all his dad gave him was a name. And he's, and every single person in that audience, and maybe not everybody has that experience. I mean, I didn't have that experience because I had the best dad ever. But, well,
That's fine. It's just funny the way you put that.
Well, but I mean, like, you know, there are 250 people yelling his lines back, and the lights are shining into his eyes, and he is tearing up and crying because all of these people have the exact same experience that he has gone. Yes, yeah. It was so touching.
It's awesome. It's a beautiful feeling.
That's the emotion, and that's what we were talking about with being a performance art. It's that taps into the emotion there at the venue,
right?
Yeah,
and you can kind of get that listening to the record, you know, depending on your mood, of course. Yeah, you know. Yeah.
But let me ask you this: we talk about all this heart and emotion, and mm-hmm. music is powerful. But what about the business side of it?
It's rough and tough, man.
Well, yeah. You don't strike me as the kind of artist that just kicks back and. And, you know, and man, hopes everything's going to work out. It seems like you got your hands on the wheel a little bit.
Well, you know, I have to say, I didn't know
with
a whole
Mona.
Lot.
Yeah, she's
just said
yeah, Mona. I didn't know a whole lot about the business
right.
of you know, music. So I had to read about, you know, a little stuff and learn over the past 4 or 5 years. And of course, yeah, my
right.
big baby over there.
Not to take any credit away from her. You're making the right moves.
Yeah. And
that's not easy for a lot of artists to figure out because they just get focused on the music. They don't make the right moves.
Yeah. Well, I found out in this music business, you have to have a good team, mm-hmm. you know, the right team, of course, somebody you can trust. And I thank God that I finally, you know, it took me a while. You know, I went all over the place to try to find the right team.
Find that right road.
It seems like I got the right team now. And so now it's time to just put the pedal to the metal.
In the documentary, You See Me Laughing, you deliver this really powerful line when they were asking you about money.
Money, exactly. I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, and you had said... It's kind of rude to ask a bluesman about money, you know.
Yeah,
it really is because
it's nobody's business to know what
that's
we.
That's right.
We
exactly. Yeah. It's exactly what you said, and the stigma that had been placed on all those guys, and you now part of that. It had to, you know. You'd learn from the rest of those old cats, and they're telling you, you know, you watch your money and don't be screwed, and keep it quiet. But business is business, you know.
It is.
And there's a reason I'm asking about the business aspect of it, and that is because when I joined Rick on this show 4 years ago, and he'd been doing it for about 6 months, and we would interview local artists.
Yeah.
And there was kind of this vibe that, you know, blues is really struggling right now, man. You know, the Memphis music scene
was tough.
We all know that blows.
Yeah.
And blues is just, you know, blues is having a really hard time. But now we flash forward 4 years later. And not just here locally, where it seems to have... There's been a sea change. There's definitely been a sea change.
Flourishing,
But I think the technology is a part of that, because the blues audience is out there. They're just kind of a niche, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So how much do you rely on the technology to get to those fans?
Well,
are you up on the social media?
Well, I'm not on it per se myself a whole lot.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm eating for lunch today.
I travel so much, you know. But when I have some time off, you know, I go to the Facebook and check a few messages and send a few messages back to fans, you know, if I have the time. Mona, she do a really good job of my social media, you know.
She's a great lady. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Thanks a lot, man.
Yeah. Part of that team, man.
Just dealing with the business part. I know one thing, the old cats taught me is, you know, a lot of them didn't know how to read and write.
Yeah.
You know, but they knew music. You know, they was music, you know, but they didn't know the business, so they didn't, you know, register their songs, you know, and so record companies got to register their songs.
Yeah, they didn't know.
And they didn't know, exactly. And it's a lot of young, you know, musicians today that don't know that same thing.
That's
they don't
right.
know how to register mm-hmm. their songs or anything like that. So me, I read about it and I just wanted to...
You're breaking that cycle because...
Exactly, I wanted to be different. You
the
know,
guys
I
that,
wanted to come...
Yeah, the guys that you grew up with and the guys that came before you, they didn't know about that and they left themselves open to just being robbed.
Exactly.
In fact, one of my favorite RL songs is Stole My Check. I absolutely fucking love that song. Because
as a guy who runs his own radio station, he's played that song out of anger before.
I
did that twice.
God, you just sounded just like him too. And
I knew you was going to say that.
I love that song because that's what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the label
happens.
Yeah, these white guys come in here with this label and they're trying to
damn
take
white
it.
Guys.
I don't know these white people. Yeah. What the hell are they trying to get into the blues for? But
all of them.
Every last, and I don't mean to make it a racial thing, but that's what it
is. It's not racial, man.
But it happened.
It happened, man. It happens with
and there were
all,
black promoters that
colors.
Did the same thing.
Right,
and
anybody, if somebody's got a talent, there's always somebody waiting out there to exploit it.
What was it you always said? He goes,
exactly. No matter what color you are.
Yeah, it's, that's just
if you can make some money, hey, man, come holler at me.
Yeah, because I think you told me one time.
And that's what it's all about.
That an artist comes out of a studio and he's got a record, you know, and he's got this physical thing and he's walking around and he goes, all right, I got this record. And then you said, yeah, and all the hands come out.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and people you don't even know that had nothing to do with this
thing. You
want to
make that record do something, you got to play the game a little bit.
Yeah, you got to play the game. You got a little payola, a little this, a little that.
See, I studied jazz guitar in my youth, and I had a guitar teacher who told me, we talk about the race thing.
Yeah.
You know, when it comes to music, you know, it's not black, it's not white. The only color anybody gives a shit about is green.
Green.
You gonna pay me to be there tonight? You got something to smoke?
If it spins or smokes, it's good with us.
Can you hold your part down?
I'll see you later.
I'll
see you later, man.
What Jeff was saying is that when you listen to it the first time, you're going to hit repeat. And I don't think
probably for the next couple of weeks, really.
It's not like you designed it that way, but you know, it's that lightning in a bottle. That happens, you know. I don't know if you're familiar with that phrase, but I
have heard it a couple times.
You know, you capture that rarely rare moment, and what you guys did really in 3 days.
Yeah, but you know that raises that question, and this is one of those stupid questions that people always ask artists. But is that the order you recorded the tracks in, or did you mix it that way, or just how'd y'all put that playlist together?
I actually want to say and give a big shout out to. Amos Harvey, which is a longtime friend. You know, we love him like family. Amos actually was the road manager for me and my big daddy, you know, when I was about 13, 14 years old.
Right. So he's been there.
Yeah, I've been
back
going
in the day.
For
yeah.
over 20 years, believe it or not. It's crazy.
Wow. But he was familiar with you guys already.
He was. So, he knew the sound, and you know, if anybody knew our sound, it was Amos.
Right.
And so he also put the little list together of the songs. You know, he great at doing that type of stuff. So I was like, Amos, go ahead, man. It's on you.
Is there a science or a theory behind track listing in a record?
You know, they say it is. In my knowledge, I would just put them on there any kind of way, you know, just whichever.
Because you could shuffle that record and still get the same experience.
Yeah, but Amos did hit a good mix, though.
He did.
And he produced the album, of course.
He did.
Yeah, you're right.
Scott really did a great job, man. You know, Amos, he really know our sound.
Well, and that's important because when you go into the studio and you go in and you're laying the stuff out, you're not thinking about stuff like that until after it's done, and then you're hearing the mixes and you're like. There's really basically what two guys at any time, so the mixes are fairly simple.
Yeah.
You know, and then you know, and of course you're adding vocals in on the end of it. So I guess for you it was a little easier to go ahead and lay vocals in after the fact.
After the fact. Well, some of them we sung vocals
while you played, right?
While we played, you know, but about five or six of them we went back and did the vocals. You know, it just felt better to, you know, lay the vocals down after we laid the music down.
So there really wasn't any scratch tracks then.
We really didn't. We did one song about three times, and that was
just to get it right, though.
And that was Born With It. We did that about three times because I wasn't comfortable. But the rest of
wait, which take did you end up going with?
The first one, I bet.
The first one. You're right.
Was it really?
Yeah. We really?
I was
did
kidding.
The first one.
No,
we
it was
did.
The first
it was
one.
The first
we did
one.
The first one. We did about three times, and we ended up doing the first one.
All right.
Miss Mona joins the conversation.
Hey, y'all.
Y'all.
Hey, y'all.
Stop.
So tell me, how did you and Cedric meet?
Actually,
you're telling
me
story.
Oh, this is going to be good.
If you can see him blushing, you're doing good. So there's one of the best last real juke joints in this country. I don't know if you've been there. Mr. Gibbs' place. It's in Bessemer, Alabama.
Yes.
But I lived in Birmingham at the time, and I'd always wanted to go, but I hadn't gone. And I'm sort of an introvert, and I tend to be one of those people who
you
makes
an introvert?
I really am.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
You haven't been that way here.
I fake it well. But I have to go, like, huddle in a corner for 2 days. After
I got you.
This,
that's
so,
fine.
Yeah.
That's all right.
But my friends dragged me out. I'd been cleaning house, had my hair up. I mean, it was in July outside.
Hot, sticky, full of mosquitoes.
Yeah, so I'm walking up to this little shack in the back of this man's yard who is, he's like 91 now.
Mr. Gipp.
He's the best, y'all. Yeah. Shout out to Mr. Gipp, y'all.
Yeah.
But I heard this sound, and I was like a zombie. I just,
me and Lightning Malcolm.
It was. Wow. He was still with Malcolm.
It was a two-man wrecking crew day.
Must go
find sound.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I thought it was like five people playing, first of all.
Yeah.
Got in there. Yeah. And just his energy as a human being, as a musician, everything just drew me to him.
It's electrifying. Yeah.
Electrifying.
Most definitely.
Yeah. But, you know, so we really just became friends. And got to know each other over a good amount of time. He was very gentlemanly.
I ain't gonna lie, I saw the hips. Hey,
I ain't gonna lie.
Oh, what's up, Drake? I was trying to talk good about you.
It was all good. Oh, it was good. Everything you said was true, baby. But I'm just adding a few things that you can add.
Yeah, exactly. You have to add to it. Well, he is a gentleman. I'll give you that.
Well, he really is a gentleman. He's sweet. He is sweet.
Thank you.
Yes, you
will. So you get involved in this professional end of what he's doing, and you're sitting there thinking, I think I can really get you out there.
Well, I observed from the outside for years and years and years.
Of the blues, right?
Just him. Watched him and his career, and I thought, oh, man. And I was like, I do not want to Yoko Ono this, people. I really don't.
Are you responsible for the breakup with Lightning Malcolm? Is it all?
Oh, no.
The two-man wrecking crew was all Mona's fault. You know.
Damn it. The wrecking part came from me. No,
yeah, well.
No, I love Malcolm. No, it had nothing to do with me. No, I mean record companies and
right.
And all
the bullshit that goes with it, yeah.
Yeah, well, I just thought people were not getting his essence on an album, and they just weren't getting it, and I thought that forever and a day. But this whole project was like serendipity. It really was.
So did you know about his family and the pedigree that comes with that going into this?
Not
pedigree.
Well,
like he's a racehorse. Well, I'm sorry.
He wears a blue ribbon on his shirt right now as we speak, y'all.
But he ought to.
Y'all can't see
100% got a pit bull right there, man.
USDA prime choice. That's what that is.
Well,
he's a thoroughbred. Yeah. So what I'm getting at though is you came into this with fresh eyes and fresh ears, really.
Absolutely knew nothing.
Yeah.
Knew nothing.
Well, you're doing a good job with him.
That's one of the best ideas.
Thank you.
But you started out as a fan, though. Like,
she did.
Yeah.
Well, she wasn't going to even come out the house. Like, they had to drag her out the house.
Right.
Yeah. She had the slightest idea who the hell I was, you know. And
don't be bashful.
And music, and that music changed her life. Like, that's exactly what happened.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn, you got a gift, boy.
Yes, calls to him, honey. Calls to him.
Thank God for everything.
Not tell you.
The universe.
I want to be Cedric Burnside when I grow up.
Yeah, no kidding.
The universe working for me.
Yeah, I mean, touched by the finger of God is what it sounds like.
It's a blessing, man.
Yeah.
That's what we talk about. We talk about this all the time. Our film maker back here, Alex Kopfler, he was working on this documentary, it's called Born With It, about Cedric before any of this went
Yeah, because he's down here shooting tonight as well.
Yes.
And we're glad to have him down here.
And he saw the same thing, too. He's like, this
but
guy
you,
has
But you guys were working with him before the Grammy thing,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. We met him and started talking before they even recorded the album.
Yeah.
He saw him live and was like, wow.
And they've been following us ever since.
Yeah.
And because of the family relation and the music and everything that
I've
came
seen
out of it.
Mainly the music.
I've seen Cedric live. It don't take anything else than that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that was really it. And then you learn the history afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's all of a sudden you're in the cult of Cedric Burnside, you know.
Amen.
That's what I love, man.
I went with
I'm glad
Jeff
to do it.
To see you the first time at the BMAs, and he said, just sit here. And just observe.
Just sit and watch.
He did. We was the last band
to play. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
you were in a hurry to leave, and I was like, no, we're gonna sit here for a minute.
You need to watch this. Yeah.
I was like, wow.
Thank you, Jeff.
You know, because all that. like Mona said a few minutes ago, there were only two people on stage, but it sounded like a whole band.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's
Jesus Christ.
That's so true. It Trent does such a great job in his play.
Oh yeah.
And I loved watching him play at the Crawfish Festivals when I saw you guys last. Yeah. And that dead thumb style, that North Mississippi style,
he keep it romping. He keep it romping at all time. It never stops.
And it sounds like there's another bass player up there.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
In fact, a friend of mine was with me, and she was like, "Where's the bass coming from?" And I said, "It's coming from him. Where's the lead coming from? Where's the rhythm coming from him?"
Yeah.
It's and he's so good. So good. Yeah, I got a chance to meet him and chat with him. And
I'm very glad to have him, man.
He's such a nice guy. Very, very nice, talented guy. And so on the next project, you're already talking about the next project. You want to have Trent on it? I don't want to out anything here. But.
Yeah. You know, that's the Cedric Burnside project. You know, me, myself, I would love to do, you know, some songs, you know, maybe a acoustic album somewhere down the road.
Ooh, yeah.
You know.
If I got a studio for you.
But, yeah, the next album, it might be my Uncle Gary Burnside as well, you know, because this album done so well. I kind of want to use that momentum and just keep bringing great shit, you know. And as long as we can do it. You know, so
would you consider the next record a sequel to this same theme here with Descendants? You want to keep in that vein?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, don't quote me on that.
No, but
yeah. If this doing you know, such a great job, all the rest of the fellas, you know, Gary and Trent, they open to doing another CD, you know, together, collaborating together on another one.
Right.
Since this one doing so good, you know, me and Trent, we do our own thing, and Gary actually got his own band as well.
Right.
Gary Burnside band.
So, yeah. And they're another phenomenal act.
Yeah,
too.
So it was good to be able to come together and collaborate when we both was not on the road at the same time.
And you're on the road a lot.
I am.
Yeah, I mean, I know I said this upstairs. I've been wanting to get you in here for the longest time, and
yeah,
it's
been a year. Glad to make it.
It's been a year and a half to try to get you on the air.
I'm so glad we had the time to do that CD. You know, we made the time to do that CD.
And that's the thing.
Well, it was only 3 days, for God's sake.
But there's so many.
3 days. It's hard to carve out 3 days.
Yeah, it is hard. Yeah, it's an extended weekend. For
there's
God's
so
sake,
many great musicians.
We practiced for about 3 weeks before we went in the studio.
Well, okay, so you went in rehearsed.
So we rehearsed for about 3 weeks on these songs.
But I've been carving out that 3 week period.
They made
up
then
we went in the studio.
And
knocked it out.
But there's so many great artists that live in this area that I mean, like. We still had Victor Wainwright in here because he's never in town.
Yeah.
He is never in the city of Memphis. And when he is, you've got like a 3 day window.
If that.
You know,
and
he'll play the rum boogie and he's out. Yeah. He's, you know.
Get what you can.
And it's been kind of the same thing with Cedric Burnside. So, like, man, the guy's working, man. He's out there hustling. He's, you know.
Yeah.
So it takes that moment where we get you in here. But let me ask you this. When you're not doing all of this, what do you do? What do you do for fun? What do you do when you're not touring or writing or playing drums? Or how do you unplug from it all?
Believe it or not, you know, I got 3 daughters and 2 stepkids. So I spend
shit, how do you have time to have a Grammy-nominated album?
Really,
I spend as much time as I can with them.
Yeah.
You know, and also, you know, believe it or not, I'm constantly writing music at home. You know, I work out 30, 45 minutes, and I'm on the guitar again, and I got the pen, and I got the phone, and I'm, you know, all the time writing music, believe it or not, you know.
So you have a set of drums set up at the house and just...
He hardly ever plays drums.
Really? Just he doesn't slip behind the kit and just...
Never. Every now and then I set them up and practice on the drums. But, like, right now they start up, and I've been playing the drums for four days now because we've been practicing on some, you know, songs and getting ready for
Gotta
the
Grammy.
Gotta
get that Grammy show together.
Yeah. So they've been out for 4 days. But mainly I'm constantly writing songs on the guitar, you know.
Wow.
You know? We heard you play.
But you get to be at home with your daughters while you're doing that, too.
And with my boo baby.
That's living the dream.
And I'm on the computer writing emails to people who have no idea who I am. Hello, this CD is so fabulous. You really should listen to it. No, we don't have a record company, but I promise you.
And this is me coming up with a new song.
And a lot of handwritten notes
while she's writing
a bunch of people.
I'm coming up with a new song. Like, hey, I mean, what you think about that? She was like, you messing me up? Like, what you think about this song right here?
Like,
I'm busy over here.
Exactly.
So you're basically in charge, Mona, of the distribution. Then you kind of have distribution, promotions, and everything else.
Everything.
That's a full time job for you, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Especially now.
Like, yeah, with all of this news hitting.
It's crazy. Yeah.
So you're having to juggle press, other radio stations, TV.
Five kids.
Come on. You're a superwoman.
Christmas.
No.
That is amazing.
I
wanted to brag that.
Please.
He didn't mention a moment ago. We're also, like, talking about an album with Samba Touré also, you know?
Really?
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. The Malian West African.
It's another beautiful thing.
Beautiful artist. And, actually, Alex from the documentarian fellow here facilitated that. He hooked it up.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, the West African thing is steeped so much in the North Mississippi, you know.
That's...
I just got into Ala Faka Touré about a year and a half, 2 years ago, and man, it blew my mind.
Yeah, because Otha Turner didn't all that drum and fife stuff that you guys, your family was into, was part of that West African vibe, wasn't it?
Oh, definitely, man. Yeah, definitely.
That's amazing.
But when that came about, man, I was like, man, what is this? I thought it was Junior Kim when I was listening.
We thought we were listening to Junior Kim.
Until he started singing. Mm-hmm. When he started singing, of course, I knew it wasn't
Junior. Right, yeah.
If he hadn't started, I would think it was some old stuff that Junior did that I hadn't heard before.
Right,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
It was good, man.
Hi, Alex.
Hi.
He's been down here shooting stuff, taking pictures and stuff. You're working on this documentary. Right here, how did you get attracted to what Cedric is doing over here?
Is that a rhetorical question?
No, it's a legitimate question, okay. Alex. I mean, what? I mean, obviously,
were you when it hit?
I mean, he's an interesting cat, and the music he plays is tremendous, and he comes from such a great lineage of family of musicians. I mean, what got you in?
Well, we originally met at a music festival in Santa Fe that Outside Magazine had put on.
Oh, no kidding!
Yeah, and so I just happened to walk in right when they had taken the stage, and I was like, what the hell is this?
Much like what you had said, Mark. Yeah. You hear it from outside and go, what is this?
You're like, how is that a two-piece, you know, with that sound? It's so full and fat and just groovy, you know. And so I was feeling it, and we walked over, and we met, and then we just kind of like we just clicked from day one.
Yeah.
And we started talking about doing this film, and then...
Actually, Alice was like, I want to do a documentary.
And it went from there.
Were you with Outside Magazine at the time? Or?
No, I wasn't. I was just happened to be... I was actually shooting another film on a French sculptor in Santa Fe that day, and we all went down there. We're like, let's go get a drink, and there's a festival going on, and bang, there it was.
And boom, I have this idea.
That's a gift.
Yeah. I would say
the universe, man.
There's some sort of divine guidance, I think, you know?
I can see it.
Because things just keep popping up and opening up. And
how long have you been shooting him now?
We've been shooting. We started, I don't know, pre-production's
almost 2 years.
Yeah, well, pre-production's been going on for a while.
Yeah.
So, but shooting is actually, you know, since the summer we started shooting.
So in that time, what have you witnessed and what have you captured? That you can talk about.
Yeah.
I mean, I would imagine you have seen some pretty impressive.
Like, there's
things.
This one guy that stepped to Cedric, and well, let's just say, like, nobody knows where he is anymore. Yeah, we can't talk about that.
Cedric killed a man in Alabama.
Wait, that's Team Model 4.
he went all tail dragger on his ass right there, you know. Hit a drumstick up his butt, man. It was big.
Tail dragger.
Dead man tell no tales.
there's a hole in Georgia somewhere.
What have we captured? We've captured a lot of we've captured performances. We've captured very intimate moments at home, which is, you know, hard to do because he's on the road so much. So,
well, home is where you are.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, but there is something special. There is something special about being here in Mississippi, or Mississippi with Cedric.
You can call us Mississippi.
We're North Mississippi.
Exactly.
It's our backyard.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with it. There's no shame in it. From
No, not at all.
I'm a lifelong Memphian, and I'm proud of it.
But Nashville thinks Memphis is North Mississippi anyway.
Exactly. But the idea is to go internationally and follow him through, you know, Israel. We would like to go to Africa. Probably not Mali right now, but maybe Senegal. We could probably meet up with Samba there, some other guys. Possibly Australia. But Israel's definitely in the cards.
Yeah.
You know, love to do New York. You know,
yeah.
That'd be a great juxtaposition there, you know, bringing Hill Country Blues up there.
You know, we had Tony Green in here yesterday.
Lovely
lady, an incredible singer. She just played Algeria.
Really?
And she said the crowds went ape. They went crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. That's for that crowd.
Of course, that's a soul sound. Yeah. So yeah, I would imagine that blues would play, and what you're playing, Cedric, mm-hmm. would fit perfectly.
I would love
in North Africa and in Western Africa. Yeah,
I would love to do it.
And Brazil.
Yeah. I would and love Brazil, it. Yes.
Like, you know, yeah.
Well, yeah, because there's a kind of a cross pollination between Africa and Brazil anyway.
Absolutely,
you know.
Well, yeah.
Well, there's a bigger slave trade. To
exactly, the slave, yeah. major slave ports. That's where you know you're going to find the best best music.
It's Creole. Yeah, it's part of the Creole thing. Yeah. You would do well in the Caribbean.
Yeah,
we that's another place I would love to go.
I was thinking of Cuba, actually.
White sand, yeah, Cuba, blue water. To, yeah. mm-hmm.
And, you know, with Cuba opening up now, and I think artists are...
Drinks and umbrellas and
shit. Well, there's going to be a ferry from Key West to Cuba.
Yeah,
I think
really?
Starting up soon.
Man, the world is changing, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Oh, so, God, you guys should do the Caribbean and Cuba and, you know, maybe Barbados or, you know.
Find some Buena Vista guys, you know.
Well, let me ask you this. When we're talking about all this pie in the sky stuff, you ever played Memphis?
All the time. I'm actually playing Lafayette soon
really?
In January.
Really?
That's one of the places I've been playing here lately for the past 3-4
months. You see that?
Three,
like, we're
months.
Both like, yeah, we're there. Yeah.
I played Lafayette 4 times now since in the last
I love that
4
room.
Or 5 months.
It's a great yeah. room. Great. It's a great room.
Yeah. It sounds January great. The lighting is good.
January 7th.
Yeah. January 7th.
January
7th.
Oh,
that's right on the corner.
Are you
going
to film that? Or
January which?
January 7th.
Possibly. Yeah.
Come on, Alex.
I'm going to try. Possible.
That's a great room to get a live performance video in. Yeah.
It is a great room.
I know. It is a great room.
It really
it's
is.
It's like a but Thursday night. Yeah, Thursday or Friday
play,
night.
Yeah.
yeah.
We did play
Look, I'm putting
DBA
it in my calendar
a couple
already.
Weeks ago.
Yeah.
And that was off the chain.
Where'd you play?
At New Orleans, DBA.
DBA.
Oh, nice. Oh, yeah. damn. Yeah.
With Papa Molly and Brian J. from Pimps and Joy Time. And Cedric, they did a little trio. And then they're also going to do that in San Francisco at the end of January.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so you guys should come out for that.
Yes, I would love to.
3 days for that.
21st, 22nd, 23rd in the Bay Area.
That's oh, man.
Yeah.
Molly
the
Burnside
boom, boom,
and Jay.
Boom, and I forget the other name.
Moe's Pub. Moe's Alley. Sorry.
But if I could say one thing.
Yes, absolutely.
Beyond the music, which is, you know, beautiful and fantastic, there's something about this man that just, I don't know, that you just fall in love with. There's this Zen-like demeanor, you know. He's like a he's like a Buddhist monk to me, you know. He's a wise man, you know. And he's not like, he's not telling you what to do. He just tells you what works for him, and you can sit there and, you know, and listen.
What have you learned lot, in following him all this time so far?
What have I learned? You mean on a personal level? Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, there has to have been some, you know, you're talking about this on a Buddhist level. Has there... not necessarily life changing, but, you know, life altering moments for you. I mean, the way you would perceive things, the way you look at things.
Absolutely, absolutely. But I'd like to keep that.
Well, we can.
You know,
BornWithItFilm.com.
I have a couple.
BornWithItFilm.com. Is that what it is? BornWithItFilm.
I have a couple filmmaker type friends that work in that industry, and I've always heard it said that, you know, when you make a movie. You know, you have a script, you have a plan going into it. When you make a documentary, you just shoot a bunch of stuff, and then you got to figure out what the story is.
You find the story in the end. Yeah, and especially for this kind of film. I never really wanted to approach it with sort of a talking heads kind of thing, because that doesn't really interest me. To me, this is like a visual poem that just moves with beautiful imagery and music, and, you know, and it's got an energy to it that, you know, the same way I feel if I watch a Terrence Malick film or...
Oh,
you know,
wow.
That kind of
okay.
Thing. Yeah.
You need to watch the trailer. It really is beautiful.
So there's a trailer that is up
yeah,
there.
Yeah, there's a teaser up there. Mm-hmm. Yep.
BornWithItFilm.com. Is there any other stuff up there that you've done that folks might want to hit and take a look at that you've done?
There's a bunch of stuff.
Yeah. You can go to my website, I guess. It's KofflerPictures.com.
Koffler Pictures?
Mm-hmm.
Got to plug, y'all.
Yeah. Well, plug the hell out of it. Yeah, that's what you do.
Yeah. I've done stuff like, you know, Paolo Soleri stuff. You know, I've kind of covered the gamut, education and all kinds of things. I mean, social issues. Yeah.
Being a documentarian, you're trying to not just tell a story, but present a message. And what is your angle here? I mean, how much more you think you got to shoot before you've got enough to work with?
I'd like to shoot for 2 years.
You've already shot for two.
Well, no, we started shooting in the summer.
Oh, the summer, okay. Yeah. So you want to shoot in front of a couple of years. Yeah,
I'd like to, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this could be very, especially if we're going, you know, into all these different countries and exploring all these threats and so forth. You
right,
know?
Because you're following a man whose story is so rich and
exactly.
deep and detailed.
Plus the family history and all that, you know.
And to express that so to much. A visual audience is... Yeah. You got a big task in front of you.
Absolutely, yeah. yeah.
Your post production is going to be a hoot.
Yeah. yeah.
You're going to be
We're
working
for
your
a great
ass off.
Editor, yeah.
hey, you got a big task, not just with your filmmaking, but you got a big task. Yeah.
You got a big task. You, yes. got a, well, you got a lot going on over there, my man.
We have a big task.
well, yeah. Is it? Well, I don't know if I should wait till we're off here. All right, so I was just looking it up. I looked at the website, bornwithafilm.com, and there's a link here where you can get involved.
Yep.
Yeah.
So we are fiscally sponsored by Austin Film Society now. So basically, we're sort of a nonprofit.
So are you out of Austin or?
I am. I'm based in Austin. Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
How do you like that Allegiant Airlines $49 ticket?
I just saw that actually today.
Yeah, how about that? You know,
I couldn't get it, but yeah.
What do you mean you couldn't get it?
You gotta have a lead.
What?
Time.
No filmmakers allowed?
No.
Yeah, exactly. They're banning filmmakers. Yeah.
Some kind of fashion. Well, that guy's got a camera.
Trying to keep him all in Austin.
Yeah, screw him.
Donald
you know.
Trump's fault.
Turn off all the phones.
Donald Trump's fault.
It's Trump's fault.
Yeah. But yeah, no, that's great that they have that. I mean, I'll definitely be using it.
But there is a way people can, if you're interested in this documentary,
yeah.
you know, help kick in a couple of bucks
yeah,
and make it work.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. We appreciate it.
So go to bornwithitfilm.com and click on the Get Involved link on that site, and it'll give you some instructions if you...
And there's a trailer up there, and there's some...
Spread
the word. Yeah, we will do, certainly do that, because anything that helps out our man down here on the end, anything to help you out, I mean, it's... This record is so beautiful.
Seriously,
I cannot say it
you're
enough.
You're like the Rocky Balboa of Memphis, Tennessee right now. We got somebody at the Grammys, folks.
I love Rocky, man.
And actually, he could have a boxing match at the Grammys and win that as well.
I think he
so
would. He's in great shape.
Two
yeah.
Awards. Yeah.
That would be awesome. So they settled the Grammys with gladiatorial combat.
Yeah.
yeah. There we go. It's him and
Cedric Burnside versus Bruno Mars.
Oh,
yeah. Boo Mitchell.
Kendrick
yeah.
Lamar versus Cedric Burnside. In a fight to the death.
Yeah. You know, you're representing.
You're right.
Man.
You're right.
You're representing home very well. Not just with yourself, but you know, Boo Mitchell.
Yay!
You know, how about that? You know, with what he's got going on with that big pop hit that he's got going on in his hand. There's an idea. How about you set up in Royal Studios for a track or two and let Boo Mitchell put his little magic fingers into your thing?
Hey man, look,
he has
like
magic.
I said, my mind is open. I'm willing to do, you know, anything.
There's so many great studios
like
here.
Do you do any session work? You know? Is that something you do?
Yeah, or? Every now and then. That's really how I started out doing session work. Man, I played with people I can't, you know, met them for the first time, never heard their music before in my life, you know.
Right.
And just come in and go in the studio 2 or 3 hours, and they be like, wow, man, this is awesome. And then I go home. You know,
that's actually gonna be all right. So
you know,
it's
like a
decent job right there. Yeah.
Thank God for it, man.
Yeah, I tell you what, you certainly have been blessed, and you come from such a great and honest space, and I really appreciate that. I really do, and I think you've done such a good job of putting that on the record.
Thank y'all so much, man.
We're not quite done with you yet.
thanks for having me on here.
Well, like
you
I said,
know,
we ain't done yet, but you're more than welcome.
It's all on this side of the table.
Let me tell you something. We built this radio station for guys like you that are out there working, and you want to talk to an audience, we've got one for you. And you're more than welcome to come down any time. Just say, hey, I'm coming down. We're gonna play. We're gonna shoot the shit for a bit. We're gonna drink a little whiskey. We're gonna have some fun.
I don't know how much you know about Radio Memphis, but we focus on local artists. That's our thing.
I thank y'all so much. I want to say to all my fans out there that you know because they was a big part of me being nominated for a Grammy. You know, and
Yes.
I just want to thank them for staying so loyal to the Hill Country Blues and let them know that we love them for that. And,
oh, amen, brother.
And we're going to keep it coming, you know.
Here's what's coming up on the next episode from Radioland with Rick Cheddar.
Take two. And so we sit, as I mentioned before, which nobody heard, with everybody out of the room, and now we're here, and equipment going through constant adjustment in the midst of, after 5 years of running the way that it's run, and we're now monkeying with everything.
We are, and so we decided that we were going to be a little productive with time, because we now have an engineering
studio time.
We have an engineering staff. Yeah, we kind of came across that. And, you know, we're waiting for those boys to get back here so we can, I guess, do some more monkeying around.
Oh, yeah, the brand new Heavy Eyes. And, He Dreams of Lions, a great record. Yeah.
And, you know, and the reason why I sit there and I said even bring that up is, one, because we were just talking about it before you and I decided to sit down and do this podcast.
That's great. Oh, great record.
But, you know, Heavy Eyes was kind of special to us.
For previous episodes, go to radio-memphis.com. To download episodes to your mobile device, search the show in iTunes, player.fm, stitcher.com, Pocket Cast, or TuneIn. And now, here's more with Rick Cheddar from Radioland.
Memphis has a very unique and wonderful little gift shop. You can find it online. It's a place called Wizards. It's a really cool joint. It's an alternative smoke shop. It's a gift store. They've got some really cool stuff. They got some stuff for everybody in there. Take a look at their banner ad. It's on our website at radio-memphis.com. Wizards, 1999 Madison Avenue here in Memphis. Open 7 days a week, 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. It's a groovy spot. You can get you a lava lamp. Add that to your collection. Some other really cool. They got Woodwick candles in there. They've got all sorts of fun stuff. Take a look and get yourself something, perhaps a gift for someone else if you'd like. Wizards, because it's still smoking. Cedric has a fantastic album out right now. Of course, you heard us talking a little bit about it. It didn't take him long to record it. It's called Descendants of Hill Country. It's a tremendous record, and it is absolutely one of the best blues records we've heard in a while, and it's one of those that when you hear from start to finish, you have to go back and hear it again. It's tremendous. It's the Cedric Burnside Project. We're going to play a cutoff of it, and it's a lovely tune. And what I like about what they've done here, what these guys did, is that they have taken some of the older stuff and a lot of original material as well, and they've made it their own. That's a cool thing. That's, you kind of have to do that when you're playing the blues, and being Grammy nominated certainly doesn't hurt one's stance on it as well, too, because there's just, you know, the talent has got to shine through. And for the past several years, I've always been a little miffed at the whole the Grammy deal, because it seems like they were rewarding people who just weren't that really hip. You know what I mean? So check it out. It's a great tune. We're going to play it right now from the Descendants of Hill Country. It's called Hard Times, right here from Radioland.
You try to talk about hard
well, there is that, and there's some other fun stuff that is coming down the way. We will have on this program coming up an act that a lovely couple that had come into our studios from St. Paul, Minnesota, Dave Lambert and Donna Dahl. They are in an outfit called Brother Sun Sister Moon. Great guys, great musicians, and just some fun people to talk to. And we'll be hearing some of that down the way here on this program. Plus, another conversation with Diana Fryer is on the way too. So all of that is coming around. And in the meantime, if you want to find out more about this program, you can find us at our usual spots online at radio-memphis.com. We're over at Stitcher. You can find us on the iTunes. If you want to download it on your Apple device, you can find us there. Plus, it's on TuneIn, and if you're on Roku, dig this. If you have the Roku television deal, get the TuneIn app, search Rick Cheddar from Radioland, and you can listen to this program on your television. Just kind of groovy, really. If you're looking for something to get into, perhaps while you're doing something around the house, you can play it through your sound system there and enjoy all the fun, as it were, there on that deal there. In the meantime, if you want to drop us a line, please do so. Radioland@pirateradiostudios.com. Love to hear from you. And keep them coming in. There you go. Well, there it is. I'm going to get out of here. I got to head on down to the radio station now and go make some more radio fun. Please to join us there if you would. In the meantime, take care of yourselves and take care of one another. We'll see you next time. I'm Rick Cheddar, and this has been From Radioland.
Rick Cheddar from Radioland is produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. All music performed during this episode was used by permission. No part of this program can be rebroadcast or used in any other way except by written consent. For bookings and other inquiries, you can write the show by sending an email to radioland@pirateradiostudios.com. For more, go to radio-memphis.com.